keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And this hour, we have our news straight and directly from the community. They're busy in Nashville. You know, we're always doing stuff and things, honey. And trying to keep up. And sometimes our community news, as you will know if you have been listening to this show anytime, it may not necessarily be community Nashville. It could be community and across the country. But it's all in the name of the community. Now, our news from the community is coming from Born Again Church. And Born Again is, let's see, y'all busy all the time. You got plays going on and programs. But there's a conference coming, a big women's conference. And I believe this is Shauna that we're going to be, or someone, it was supposed to be, that we're getting our details from. Shauna? Hello?
Sandra.
Oh, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Is this Dr. Holt?
Yes, it is.
How you doing? I was like, I thought I was going to talk to Dr. Holt. Are you doing okay?
I'm great.
Good. It's good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Good to hear yours also.
Thank you. Now, you are quite busy in preparation, working on the upcoming women's conference. And
yes. Well, this year we're calling it a gathering.
Oh, gathering.
A women's gathering, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, give us an overview, and then we'll go down deep into some details.
Okay. Well, it is a women's gathering, and we're calling it that because we're dealing with stories and conversations among women, talking about those things in our lives that we don't always want to face. But it's really talking about a woman's heart. Mm-hmm. We're coming from the four chambers of a woman's heart, how we are built, how we are made. And when we deal with those four chambers, mm-hmm. One of those chambers we're calling maturation or becoming. And then one of those chambers we're calling sister to sister or connecting. Hmm. We have another chamber that's about letting go, and it's called freedom. You know, that's one of those biggies, that learning how to let go of those things that hinder us, getting emotional about things. And then we have on that Saturday, we have self-care. Saturday mm-hmm. is all about self-care. Hmm. Because, you know, for us, many, many times, we take care of everybody else except ourselves.
Oh, yes.
And so it's all built around us knowing how to connect to each other as mm-hmm. sisters, knowing how to let go of those things that hinder us, and knowing how to take care of ourselves so that we can mature mm-hmm. into the women that God really wants us to be. We have so much purpose in life, but mm-hmm. we miss out on it if we're not careful.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are you a presenter, Dr. Holt?
I am. Well, the way that it's being done, it's I'm a moderator,
okay.
and I will be teaching a class. But it's done in a different kind of way mm-hmm. in that we will have panels dealing with different subjects.
Okay.
And there will be women telling their stories.
Uh-huh.
You know, we get so much out of it when we tell our stories.
That's
and we
true.
Are free to tell our stories without
yeah.
being judged.
That's true. That's
and
true.
And there's so much deliverance there. And so it's going to be set up in a way where you've got a panel that's talking about whatever the subject mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. but then the audience is able to participate. The audience can ask a question. The audience can tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
They can give a testimony, mm-hmm. you know, or however that goes. But there's interaction. That's mm-hmm. how it's set up. And I'm excited about that. But we also have some classes that would be taking place doing, like, kind of the middle of the day.
Okay.
There would be some classes, yes.
Now, there's a young lady, I think that's one of your church members, Anna Walker.
Yes, hello.
And are you a speaker, or what part do you play in Fashioned in His Image program?
Well, I am actually one of the co-coordinators of the gathering.
Oh, okay.
I have worked with Fashioned in His Image for almost 17 years now.
Okay.
Working in our center and directly with our president and CEO, Kiwanis Hockett, over the years, and putting together gatherings such as this. And as Dr. Holt said, we're excited because this is unprecedented for us because we actually have a whole different set up this time, and it's really about the attendees more so than it is about us and coming to, you know, regular service where you come and you hear a speaker and you're listening and taking notes. It's really about the attendees, so there's something for each one of them to understand. So my role is really to help coordinate. I will also be participating in conversations. I'll also be participating in some of the classes as well.
Now, Anna, how will you all, are you going to instruct the audience and the participants, you know, don't be judgmental, and because you know how we do, and because people, you know, nowadays everybody, you know, is putting on false faces and blah, blah, blah. So that it will enable people to get down to the real reason why they're there.
Most definitely. And that's one of the reasons that we chose the topics and the chambers that we chose. Freedom is really not only about being able to be transparent, but also to be in a safe place with other sisters where you can share and ask the questions and you can receive real talk answers and like you said, get down to it, because you're right. A lot of false images, fake news, a lot of that is really prevalent right now, and we really want to get to the heart of the matter. So our conversations are going to get down to the heart of the matter, talking about things like competition and comparison, trust issues, what it really means to be vulnerable, and crucial conversations among women. So, yes, we're going to leave no holes barred.
Well, I know, Dr. Holt, from watching your work and knowing what you do professionally, if you are in the room,
I'm so excited about this. I can't describe how excited I am about it.
Well, we're
really hoping the women will show up, because there's so much that I believe God is wanting to do with us in this day and time.
Definitely. Well, what are have you heard any early comments yet, or any of the sisters of the community that have said, you know, that sounds like something we really need to participate in?
Well, I have. I've talked to several people, several women and younger women who have told me this is exactly what I need right now.
Okay.
And so I'm really looking forward. I actually had someone call me last week, and it was an interesting conversation. And they said, told me who gave them my number, and then they began to talk to me about some problems they were having. And I'm telling you, everything that they were saying related to this gathering. And I finally said, you know what? I said, do you know about the gathering that's coming on November 6th? And she said, I heard about it, but I said, you need to be there. Because everything that you are talking about that you're having problems with, we are handling in the gathering. You can get everything you need right there. And I counseled her. I talked to her about her issues or whatever. I said, but you would get so much more. She said, I am going to register today.
Wow, that's beautiful.
So I just think we need to really put it out there and let women know this is a place to be November 6th through the 10th, I'm telling you.
Well, and I certainly hope that they do respond, ladies, because so many times, you know, our community is saying, well, I didn't have anybody to talk to, or well, I this. And
exactly.
Well, and it's like, no, this organization is presenting this event specifically with you in mind.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
You don't walk around with this big suitcase of baggage and issues. And will there also be, in addition to in the chambers, the sessions you're going to have, dramatic presentations and other things too. Is this to spur discussion as well, ladies?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely, because we want to present.
There are all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Anna.
I was just going to say, yes, absolutely, because we don't want it to be the same as usual, as
sure.
we mentioned. So
right.
the monologue, the dramatic monologues, and some other things that we have scheduled
mm-hmm.
are really to help women, as we're going to say. The first night is called Finding Your Rhythm.
Hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so we all have a rhythm. We have a rhythm to our lives. We
yeah.
have a rhythm of waiting.
Yeah.
We have a rhythm of thought. We have a rhythm of behavior. And a lot of that has been shaped. The beat of that has been shaped with who we are, the,
mm-hmm.
the perceptions of who we are. But that's what makes us unique. We've been given
right.
that rhythm that God has for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so through a lot of different ways of artistic expression, particularly on the first night and as an undercurrent through the whole week,
mm-hmm.
that woman will be able to find her rhythm. So it's really a part of helping her discover it, because, again, it's not just about listening to conversations and being engaged. It's a lot of other
mm-hmm.
Creative
yeah.
expression that's going to take place to help
yeah.
her find a rhythm.
Okay. And Dr. Holt, how should someone come dressed for this? And do they need to think about, you know, lunch or however this is going to work? How does it work for that?
Okay. They can just come casual, comfortable, just comfortable, where they can relax and enjoy this and take it all in. Just take it all in.
Okay.
You asked about lunch. Was that it?
Is there a coffee or tea or lunch or something that comes with this? Because I see 9 to 1:30 and then evening sessions and then 10 to 2. So is it?
We will have food trucks available.
Okay.
If people want to do that, yeah,
okay.
that's how that's going to run. Because
okay.
registration is only $50.
Oh, yeah, that's reasonable. Definitely.
Right, and then we'll also have they'll have an opportunity to have lunch on their own
okay.
as well. But at this time, we
right.
won't necessarily include lunch.
Okay,
right,
yeah, because $50 is quite reasonable.
It's quite reasonable.
It is.
And as
uh-huh.
you know, and you've been to our conferences, and you've experienced some things that we have done at Baja, and you know that we do everything in excellence, and we have
uh-huh.
A lot to offer, and we have a lot of things that they're going to take away, and in terms of goodie bags, and we're going to have door prizes
mm-hmm.
and things like that. So it's really going to be an engaging experience.
Excellent. So, ladies, if folks would just get their $50 in order, and or can you register at the door?
Yes.
Deanna? Okay. Good.
Yes, we will take registrations at the door, also online at
uh-huh.
eventbrite.com. Look up Fashioned in
right.
an Image. If you're in the neighborhood, you can stop by Born Again Church or our FIHA office, and we will gladly register you.
Okay.
Our registration will not end until the day of.
Okay.
The day of Friday, rather Friday.
Okay. Dr. Holt, what were
Sharon,
you gonna...
you can tell Anna's an organizer, right?
I see that. I ain't mad at you, girl.
We want these ladies to definitely come.
Well, she could. That's why I asked her for all the, you know.
All the
she had, yeah, because you had it off the top of your head.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. She's excellent.
Now, Dr. Holt, I want to get the last sentence from you, because I know you have history with the church in Baja. It started in 1982?
I think. That is correct.
That is correct.
Okay, 82.
You're good.
All right.
You're
good. Yeah. Well, see, I was just, I think that I, because I know over the years I've done a lot of.
You have.
Okay.
You certainly
right.
have.
You've yes, you have.
Yes, you have.
Uh-huh.
We appreciate you.
Oh, you're good. Well, you know, I love Jesus, so, you know.
See?
And we love you.
All the difference.
Yeah, this like piece of cake right here.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, please give First Lady and Bishop my very best and much success to you ladies on this beautiful event, okay?
Thank you so much.
Okay.
We look forward to seeing you there.
All right.
Thank you.
Well,
bye-bye now.
If my schedule allows it, I certainly will come to try to support you. Have a blessed day, girls.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Working hard for Born Again Church. That's what's up.
All right.
And you're welcome. Fashioning His Image Women's Ministry at Born Again. And they got a big deal coming up there for the ladies. So, ladies, if you need to get your tune-up for yourself, work on you before you try to work on Boo. It starts Wednesday through November 6th through Sunday, November 10th. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. It's just about to wrap up this right here on Vietnam Vets at Conference Drive. It's westbound. The heaviest flow is going eastbound right now. Other wrecks out here include McCroy Creek and M Hill Pike at the intersection in Donaldson. Heavy to the south now on 65 down into Brentwood, Franklin, all the way to Spring Hill. And traffic's really picked up now also on 40 as you head out past the airport. This traffic report brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken, 5814 Noblesville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
On the next Jazz Night in America, John Scofield presents music from his record Quiet and reunites with his Blue Matter Electric Fusion roots.
When we started to play, I did get chills from the songs and remembering all the good times we had because the music reminds me of some real friends.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Support for WFSK comes from Born Again Church. Ladies, discover your divine rhythm, fashioned in His image. Presents A Woman's Heart, The Awakening Women's Gathering, Wednesday, November 6th through Sunday, November 10th. Awaken to a week that will include a creative workshop experience and conversations on matters of the heart. Learn who you are, how to connect with other women, sister to sister, living in freedom, and the importance of self-care. Registration is $50. Fashioned in His image, A Woman's Heart, The Awakening Gathering at Born Again Church, November 6th through the 10th. Register now at fihi.net or eventbrite.com. That's fihi.net or eventbrite.com.
Are you over age 65? If so, it's time to get your ducks in a row about Medicare. Each fall, you have a chance to make changes to your Medicare coverage for the following year. But the clock is ticking, and this year, Medicare open enrollment only lasts from October 15th to December 7th. For more information on everything you need to know about Medicare and choosing your coverage plan, visit insurancequotes.com.
Support for WFSK comes from Nashville General Hospital at Meharry, reminding you that October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It has been proven that African American and Hispanic women have a higher breast cancer death rate than women of other racial or ethnic populations because they are statistically less likely to participate in mammography screenings and more likely to be diagnosed with late-stage breast cancer. If you are over 40 and haven't had a screening mammogram, call the Breast Health Center at Nashville General Hospital today, 615-341-4543. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
I am so glad to have you on my show again. So, you know, now that I've said that, I feel so much better. I was like, I want to tell the dude.
Well, I'm delighted to join you again.
Okay. I just wanted to tell you that, you know, of all the shows that I've done, authors, thousands, books, ton, 10 tons, I think you... I got more phone calls and more interest in you than just about anybody. So,
oh, great.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you were on the show a couple of years ago with your Dog Whistle book. And, you know, people were like, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. And this makes sense. And I am so glad that you are back. We've been watching to see what was going to come next from you. And you have a new book that we'll be talking about today, Merge Left, Fusing Race and Class, Winning Elections, and Saving America.
I think your audience is really gonna like this book, because this is not a book that says, it's just more like, hey, here's what's happening to us. This is a book that says, and here's how we fight back. Mm-hmm. And not just here's how we fight back in a sort of a, like, but we're still gonna lose kind of a frame. This mm-hmm. is, here's how we fight back and win.
Right.
After I published Dog Whistle Politics, I realized we didn't need more analysis. We really needed a way to win. And I knew from the research I'd done about the way that the right had weaponized racism,
mm-hmm.
that they did so through focus groups, through careful study, through national polling. They wanted to figure out precisely the right words they could use
mm-hmm.
that would trigger racist stereotypes, but that would allow them to pretend that they were completely innocent,
mm-hmm.
right? So,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Ronald Reagan and Welfare Queen or,
right.
or Silent Majority or,
right.
you know, Illegal Alien and Sanctuary
right.
Cities and, you know, all of that stuff. People aren't just coming up with that.
Mm-hmm.
They're studying
mm-hmm.
it. And so what we did is we said, well, we're going to use the same methods to
mm-hmm.
figure out how to beat them.
Hmm.
We're going to do focus groups, and we're going to do national polling, and we're going to talk to thousands of people across the country from every racial group
mm-hmm.
because we want to figure out how to communicate effectively a message that says, hey, they're trying to rip us apart.
Right.
We want to come together.
Right.
And what we found when we did that is
mm-hmm.
there's a very effective message that's popular, that is the most popular message among
mm-hmm.
Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say among Democrats, I mean members of the Democratic base, but also the more persuadable voters.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean whites and also African-Americans
mm-hmm.
and also Latinos. This is the single most popular message with all of these groups, including union households, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's really good news on how to beat Trump and all of his dog whistle imitators.
Yeah, and he's one of the worst. I mean, you know, I knew Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and all those people. And also for historical perspective, you know, black people have long had this terminology used against us to keep us down. And that stuff worked and worked very well. And I see the playbook got revived in politics. When did you, from the research that you did, when did it shift from just being the slave and Jim Crow mentality into politics? Was it back in the 50s and 60s, Ian?
No. The superior position of whites as a topic, as an organizing principle,
mm-hmm.
has been a central focal point of American politics since the founding of the country.
Hmm.
And I think most people don't realize it because we celebrate the founding in this, you know, this glowing rhetoric of all people are created equal. But,
mm-hmm.
but we also know that when the 13 colonies were first debating whether they would come together and form
mm-hmm.
a union,
mm-hmm.
the biggest single division was slavery.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, the biggest single division was what is going to be the relationship of white people to the country in relationship to black people. And then that debate is like, well, what is the future of slavery and
right.
where will it be allowed / where will it be central?
Yeah.
that debate evolves into what is the relationship between whites and Native Americans the country expands into the Southeast, you know, Florida and all that, expands to the West. Then there's these debates about how, you know, when the United States goes to war with Mexico, how much of Mexico should the United States take? What's going to happen with brown population of Mexico? That conversation then anticipates the empire building where the United States is picking up Puerto Rico and Guam, Hawaii, Cuba for a moment, right? This conversation about what is the relationship of white dominance over non-white races is central to American politics from the beginning of the country. What changes in the 50s and the 60s is that the civil rights movement is this moment of profound cultural change where through the bravery and the activism of the civil rights movement, though also with the support of the Democratic Party, you get a pivotal shift where people say, hey, organizing our country formally around the superior position of whites is immoral. That violates our core principles that all people are created equal and that we have equal dignity and worth. That's simply wrong to organize a country in a way that formally supports white dominance. And this is a huge event. I don't want to minimize it. This is a huge event.
Right.
But we should also be clear that's not the end of racial dominance in American politics. It's actually just the moment in which the conversation about the position of white vis-a-vis people of color goes underground, shifts into code.
And
you can see this most clearly in the South. In the South, through the 40s and into the 50s, you had politicians saying very clearly, I represent the white man. This is a white man's country.
Right.
By the mid-1960s, they're not saying that anymore, even in the South. Instead, they're saying, I represent states' rights. and states' rights. You know, if you take that literally, it means state-federal relations. But no one's agitated about that. It's that in the South, everybody understood clearly states' rights meant the rights of Southern states to continue to use law to oppress and humiliate African Americans. That is, these politicians in the 1960s are saying they are there to represent whites and to maintain the dominant position of whites in society. But they're no longer saying it expressly. Now they're saying it in dog whistles. They're saying it in code. And the code of the times is states' rights.
Yeah.
Frankly, the code of 2019 is make America great again.
Well, and you know, Ian,
these are deeply racial conversations we're having.
Well, and let me just make sure that the audience is real clear. So if you are black or African-American or Hispanic or whatever, when you start hollering states' rights, you better know what you're talking about. Well, you know, because a lot of times people that are the blacks that become Republicans or on the right side, conservatives or whatever it is they become, they start chanting that same stuff, and to a certain degree, I don't even know if they realize what they're saying or not, Ian.
You have just made one of the most important points that almost nobody recognizes, but we got to surface this and we got to be real clear about it. What the right is doing is they are telling a basic story about whites as hardworking and deserving. And people of color as essentially lazy and threatening. But they're telling the story in code. They don't say whites and people of color. Instead, they talk simply about hardworking people or lazy people or innocent people versus criminals and gangbangers and thugs. Or they talk about people who took their turn and waited in line to come to this country versus the line cutters who don't respect our laws and are basically criminals. When they translate their message of racial threat into code, that message becomes very quite convincing to majorities of African Americans and Latinos. This is really stunning. This is part of the research we did.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of sort of an internalization of the idea, even within black and brown communities, mm-hmm. we have deeply internalized the idea that many of our fellows are undeserving, are lazy, are threatening, are inherently violent.
Mm. Mm.
And this is precisely the story that the right, and frankly, many whites, tell about us.
Mm-hmm.
When they tell that story in code, we tend to, many people accept it. And now, I want to clarify this. I get it that some people don't work hard, and I get it that some people commit crimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the point of these stories.
And white people do all that stuff. Ian, let's get clear. White people are lazy. There are some, and there are some that commit crimes. And it's not just a minority thing. It's a people thing.
Exactly. It's a people thing. It's a people. So the poison is to tell these stories mm. as general descriptions of the whole group.
Mm.
And yet that's exactly what happens. You think about the way in which the Republicans' message about immigrants and about refugees, you know, there's this sense of like, They're coming to get you. It's a caravan. It's an invasion.
Yeah.
It's, you know, these are rodents. It's like, that's the racism to say this negative dehumanization applied to this whole group, and yet many people, including majorities of African Americans and Latinos, accept those sorts of stories as long as they're not expressed in obviously racist terms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if we don't know the root of them, we'll sit there and get caught up at a rally or wherever you get caught up at and be chanting the same thing. I'm like, do you all know what you're saying? And do you recognize this as what it is? And I honestly don't think, because Professor, I don't think this conversation has had enough that folks get it. Does that make sense?
It completely makes sense. I completely agree with you. But that also points to a way forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we need to hear much more in African American and Latino communities is people saying to each other,
mm-hmm.
hey, there's a con that's being run against us.
Mm-hmm.
And the con involves a whole bunch of lies about where the main threat in to our families comes
mm-hmm,
from.
Mm-hmm.
And the lie is the threat comes from other people who might be criminal, might be lazy, might be whatever, that all these racist stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is the threat in our lives comes from politicians who intentionally divide us
mm-hmm.
so that they can win support from us while really they're just working for the economic titans who are rigging the rules to make more and more money mm-hmm. off of all the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the real threat comes from. And this sort of a conversation will help people
sure.
say, oh, I hear what's happening now. This is just another effort to divide
yeah,
us. This
definitely.
Is just another lie.
Right.
We're being lied to all the time.
The big lie,
about
yeah.
who threatens us as if other powerless people are the biggest problem I face.
Right.
And not the wealthiest, most powerful segments of society
mm-hmm.
that want to run the economy for their own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do that, they pit us against each other.
Absolutely. Let me reintroduce my guest to the audience today, and he has making a reappearance on the show after a couple of years. He was on the show many years ago, and some of you remember that because you called me and said, I like that. I like him. What's his name? His name is Ian Annie Lopez. He holds an endowed chair as the Earl Warren Professor of Public Law at the University of California, Berkeley, where he teaches in the areas of race and constitutional law. And Professor Lopez co-founded the Race Class Narrative Project, exploring how to defeat dog whistle politics. He also co-chaired the AFL-CIO's recent advisory council on racial and economic justice, in addition to Merge Left, his new book we're talking about today, and Dog Whistle Politics we had on before. And I didn't know, I guess I must have slept, I didn't know you wrote White by Law. I mean, I missed that one. So you've had a couple of books, and we're catching up today with the Merge Left book. And when did White by Law come out?
White by Law was my first book that came out in 1996.
Okay, 96.
It was a book that was saying, hey, you know, and this is so important. We are so used to talking about race like, you know, it's the race is our skin color. But race isn't our skin color. Mm-hmm. Race is a set of ideas about the meaning of skin color, a set of ideas about positions of different groups. And it's not just a set of ideas. It gets built into society. It gets built into law. Well, it also gets built into politics.
Mm-hmm.
Politics says a lot about, it does a lot of work
mm-hmm.
in terms of building racist ideas.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you see coming from Republicans and, frankly, from Fox News. Almost mm-hmm. every day.
Every day.
These are building racist ideas, pushing people to believe that immigrants, that Muslims, that African Americans are somehow inherently lazy and violent. When the truth is, we have to now turn around and use politics and use culture and use mm-hmm. literature, mm-hmm. use our churches to promote ideas of racial equality and racial solidarity, or not even racial solidarity, of human solidarity,
mm-hmm.
to say, you know what? The truth is, we come from different communities, we have different histories, mm-hmm. we have different traditions and foods, but we have similar aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
We want to take care of our family. We want to treat each other with dignity. We want to see ourselves in the smiles of the faces we encounter.
Right.
We all want that. And so, but that's not going to happen all by itself,
mm-hmm.
especially when you have some of the most wealthy and most powerful segments of society trying to tear us apart so they can seize power.
Truly.
We're going to have to affirmatively build these connections.
Mm-hmm.
that allow us to gain power for ourselves and to take our government back and to make this the sort of society that we want.
Hmm. Now, Ian, let me ask you a little bit about Chapter 3. The right consistently links race, class, and government. And in particular, you, at the very beginning of this chapter, you are talking about Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama in 2016. Share with us what's in that chapter.
This is a really important point. What the right has done for 50 years is, well, let me back up even further, because if we can get people to go back and think, hey, we used to believe that government should work for everybody. And the idea is just so obvious, so intuitive. Of course government should work for all of us. You know, the founding of the country is government by and for the people. Of course the government should work for all of us. How did that conviction end? Because mm-hmm. if you look around, a lot of folks, a lot of white folks, but a lot of people of color are like, no, government's the enemy. I want government mm-hmm. out of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Keep government away from me. What? You got to be kidding me. Because when we say government is the enemy, when most people say government's the enemy, that just makes it easier for corporations to hijack government. And so what the right did is it said, hey, the party of big business.
Mm-hmm.
What the party of big business did is it said, you know, we can't stand for election by saying we want you to vote for us because we're going to work for the rich people. It's not going to fly. So instead what they started to say is, hey, you need to vote for us because we're going to defend you
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
against dangerous and undeserving people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're using codes, so they're saying, we're going to fight for states' rights. We're
mm-hmm.
going to fight for law and order. We're
right.
going to crack down on crime. We're going to defend the middle class. We're going to defend the silent majority. We represent the heartland. But that's their story.
Right.
And they then, so that's the race part. But the race part's not enough. Because then they go on to say, and you know what? The real enemy in your life is government. Because government and Democrats and coastal liberals, they use government to give away benefits to undeserving people. This is the welfare queen. They're giving money to these welfare cheats, right? So the safety net, health care, public education, those are just giveaways to undeserving people. Cut their funding. Or they're saying, you know what, government, government's the real problem because there are all these dangerous people out there and government won't control them. It releases them from prison. It coddles prisoners. It wants open borders. It wants to flood the country with refugees. That's the message from the right. It says, fear and resent people of color, but hate government. And when you hate government, what do you have left? And what the right says is you have two things left. You have the marketplace, trust the job creators, and you got a gun. Go buy a gun because you're on your own. And these two messages are the same message. Fear and resent people of color. They're dangerous. They're taking your job. They're invaders. Hate government. It coddles them. It won't protect you. You are on your own.
And they're going to steal your women.
The marketplace, you're on your own. Don't organize. Don't join a union. Don't vote. You're on your own. Oh, and by the way, because you're on your own, go get a gun.
Right.
Because you're going to need to protect your family because no one else is going to protect you.
Well, Ian, it reminds me of the old...
government, these are all linked.
It reminds me of the old narrative to save the white women. I mean, every time I see this thing, it's like, don't mix the races. You know, save the white ladies. You know, that Civil War mindset. It just so much reminds me of that. That every time I feel like I'm in a movie or something every time I experience this or watch it or see it, because if we mix our races, then oh, the world's going to come to an end, sure enough, in the minds of some. They don't want us mixing and having babies and marrying and all that.
That's the rerun with one added ingredient. Government's the enemy.
Right.
Government wants to force race mixing. Government won't prosecute the black rapist. Government coddles the black rapist. That was the Willie Horton ad. Right? So we are stuck in the same. This could be Birth of a Nation, you know, Ku Klux Klan propaganda from 100 years
yes,
ago.
It could.
With one added element. Liberal government's the enemy. It wants to force that race mixing. It won't protect white women. Right? That's the underlying message. And the power of that message convinces a lot of people, frankly, a lot of people across the South, overwhelmingly white, to vote for Republicans who then turn around and support the largest, wealthiest corporations in the country and actually siphon wealth from all of us up into the economic stratosphere. Yeah. All of our money, if you think about the South, money's being pulled out of the South and sent to New York by to Wall Street, by politicians who are campaigning by saying, I'm going to protect you from racial equality and integration. I'm going to protect you from these dangerous people of color.
Now, in the lead with, should you lead with racial justice or should the left, in on page 103, I want to spend a minute in here because that's all that happens every election. And don't talk about black stuff or don't talk about stuff for minorities, because if you do, the white voters won't vote. Is that what you address in this chapter? And in particular, I'm just looking at page 103.
Yes. Here's the trap, and then here's the way out of the trap. The trap is the right is using racism to divide voters. But if we call it out, if we say, hey, that's racist, hey, Donald Trump, you're a bigot, if that's all we say, that actually reinforces the right's message that we are fundamentally divided into warring racial groups, and it backfires, and we lose support. So a lot of Democrats say, okay, if we can't call them racist, we should not talk about racism at all. Huge mistake. I completely disagree. we must talk about racism. We have to talk about racism. Mm-hmm. It's the principal weapon against us. We have no choice but to address racism.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, we need to talk about it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Stop
mm-hmm.
talking about racism as primarily a white problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we talk about it as a white problem, it backfires. We can't build the solidarity we need. Talk about racism as a weapon of the rich being used against all of us in the class war they're winning. Think about Donald Trump.
No kidding.
Is the main point that Donald Trump is a bigot? I think he is. But if all we do is call him a bigot, we actually lose support because a lot of people don't, right? So why do that? How about this? Say instead, Donald Trump is a racist as a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a con man who intentionally uses racism as his con.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump's game is to stoke racial division while he ends up helping himself as a real estate billionaire
mm-hmm.
and all of his billionaire cabinet members and all of the billionaires who funded his campaign.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is a self-claimed billionaire con man.
Yeah, he is.
And his con is racism. And when we let racism win, we all lose.
Definitely.
Notice what happens when we talk about racism head on, but frame it as a weapon against all of us.
Right.
This creates room for all of us, for whites and people of color, to say, we have the same enemy.
Right.
We're being hurt by the same dynamic. We're not being hurt the same way. People of color are being hurt a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
But all of us are being hurt by the same dynamic. Politicians intentionally mm-hmm. using racial division as a weapon,
hmm.
and all of us have an interest. All of us, to save our families, whether we're white, black, or brown, to save our own families,
mm-hmm.
we need to reject racial division and come together and build cross-racial alliances to save our families. And I'm going to put this in an even more pointed way.
Mm-hmm.
White folks, to save their families, need to fight racism against black people.
Absolutely.
Because it's racism against black people,
mm-hmm.
it's racism against brown people that has been weaponized in politics
mm-hmm.
and that is putting into office politicians who are hurting all of us
mm-hmm.
by running government and running the economy to benefit the billionaire class.
Mm-hmm. And additionally, can you throw in against people that are poor? Because if you're poor and white, you don't have any more power than the rest of us. So
that's exactly right. That's so right. What the Republicans have done is they've invented this story mm-hmm. that says, hey, poverty is mainly a reflection of your character. Did you work hard enough? And if you only worked hard enough, you would have been rich. And if you're poor, you deserve to be poor.
Mm-hmm.
And if you deserve to be poor, you don't deserve to be cared for.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to care about you. Now, that story is just heartless. It's mm-hmm. just cruel.
It
it's just
it
a
really
massive
is.
Lie.
It is.
Why do so many people support it? So many people believe that story because they understand that story through a racial lens.
Yeah. Yeah.
They understand that story in a way that says, well, you know, most of the middle class people are white, and they're probably middle class because they worked hard, and
mm-hmm.
so that proves it. And most of the poor people are black, and they're probably poor because they didn't work hard because they're lazy, so that proves it. It's the racial component
mm-hmm.
that makes a story of wealth or poverty as a reflection of individual
mm-hmm.
character
mm-hmm.
compelling to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a terrible lie, and when we believe that lie, we not only turn our backs on African-Americans and Latinos, we turn our backs on whites, too. We turn our backs
mm-hmm.
on all of the poor. I don't
mm-hmm.
know if you remember, this was the moment that crystallized it for me back when Mitt Romney was running for president
mm-hmm.
against Barack Obama, and they had that tape came out where he said, hey, 47% of the population doesn't make enough money to pay federal income tax.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about those people. They're never going to vote for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do anything for them.
Mm.
That is a Republican candidate for president who's saying, I don't need to care about half the country.
That's right.
That's the message from the party of big business.
That's what he's
we
saying.
We can ignore, sacrifice, blame
mm-hmm.
the half the country who are poor and working class because their economic struggle is their own darn fault. And that message is just cruel. It's just wrong. We are all in this together. The system is not working. The system is siphoning wealth to the stratosphere. You and I, we know lots of people who are poor, who are working class, and who are working their butts off. This is not a matter of people just not being willing to work hard. I'm talking to my students, people who graduate, people I know, they're working two or three jobs, and they cannot make ends meet. This whole business about you're poor because you're not working hard, that is the lie that is told by the party of big business.
Right, exactly. And don't y'all believe it, especially if you are working hard. And, you know, and with multiple jobs, taking care of the kids, tote the barge and lift the bale. And lastly, I got to ask you this because I meant to do it earlier with something that you said. Is there a possibility, and do you address this in the book, that there are people on the left that believe some of the dog whistles themselves because they grew up in this United States like the rest of us, and they still have that in the back of their head, so they can't totally get on board with racial justice and all that because they really have some of these closeted feelings of their own?
You know, That's a hard conversation, but it's such an important conversation. And here's the way I would say it. On the left, a lot of people feel like they feel warmly towards people of color. They believe, or they say they believe, in racial justice. But at the same time, the dominant story that people on the left, that frankly that white people, white liberals, tell themselves is, hey, racial justice is a moral thing, and I should do it. I believe in it. It's just not necessarily my priority. I got to do other things first, but I believe it, and I'll get to it. And this sense that hey, racial justice is kind of it's an option that it's not necessary to your own survival, that you can get to it when you get a chance. That needs to change, because the fundamental insight here is that it's racial division that has been the single most powerful weapon on behalf of rule by the rich, and that racial division is the single greatest threat every one of our families face. And so we need a message that says to liberal whites, glad you believe in racial justice. Just want to emphasize, racial justice is how you're going to save your family. True and meaningful integration, true and meaningful cross-racial solidarity, power sharing, seeing people as real equals, that is how you're going to save your family. This is not charity. This is not simply a matter of morality. This is not optional. This is the single most important thing you can do to save your family. Build solidarity across race lines, precisely because racism is the weapon that is being used to take power and wealth from you and to expose your children to a society that is badly divided, in which people can't make their way forward, and frankly, an environment that's on the verge of collapse. We have an environmental catastrophe coming up quick that is going to ruin the lives of everybody. What is the root of that? The root of that is a political system that is run for the benefit of major polluters, of major petrochemical industries, but who use racial division as a way to get their favorite politicians elected. The message here is racial justice is the primary route forward for every person, whether you're black, brown, or white. This is not just charity. We got to go all in on building human solidarity across these destructive lines of division.
Amen. My guest today, I'm just like, you know, this person is the kind of person that I could just sit here and talk to for the rest of today. But I know he's a busy man right now, and I am a busy woman. And Ian, it is always, always a privilege to get to chat with you on these pressing matters and topics. It is just really, really an honor to have you on the show. Ian Haney Lopez is a law professor at the University of California, Virginia Berkeley, a commentator and also author of books you might be familiar with, such as White by Law, Dog Whistle Politics, and his latest, pick it up, y'all, pick it up, entitled Merge Left, Fusing Race and Class, Winning Elections, and Saving America. To find out more about you, where you speak, what you're doing, get the book, give us the best place to get information on you, Ian.
MergeLeft2020.org. MergeLeft2020.org. All run together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working with some amazing people. We are going to start a grassroots house party campaign that is going to talk to people about this way of framing racism as a weapon against all of us and give people the tools they need to be practically involved in building the multiracial, class-conscious movement that we need to get this country back on track.
Amen. So that information is on the website as well?
Yes.
Okay. Ian, this has been my pleasure. It's a privilege. And, you know, I'm one of your biggest fans in Nashville.
Thank you, Shay. It's always wonderful to talk with you, and I really appreciate the years of support and engagement.
Absolutely.
I really, truly do.
Absolutely. We'll continue to fight the good fight, and we will continue to read your work and follow your career, okay?
Wonderful, Sharon. You take good care.
Thank you. That was my pleasure to check in with him. He's just been so busy. And thank you to my guests today who have been so wonderful. Our News from the Community folks, of course, and former Mayor Bill Purcell. It was really good to see him and chat with him about things and stuff. Nashville. Back in the day. Actually, you remember when he first got elected and everything? You remember?
I do.
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Life was different in 99, wasn't it?
Totally.
Yeah, that was before 2000.
Yeah. That was the year the Titans came, I think.
Was it 99?
99 or 2000, one of them.
Or 95.
You know, it took them a while to transition from Houston.
Oh, that's right. They did have to transition. Well,
I think they were in Memphis first, and I came
so
here.
So is that BCAD or BT before Titans or AD after Titans? AT or BT? So that's your schedule. Your clock is Titans? Okay. Yep. That's not mine, but that's yours. Anyway, well, that was interesting. Anyway, and of course, we are happy to have Ian Haney Lopez back. And be sure to just follow up on his work. He'd be saying, because I heard some stuff, you know, I was like, you know what? Can we just keep touching and agreeing, you know? Just a lot. It's a lot. Merge Left, Fusing Race and Class, Winning Elections, and Saving America. That's all we have for you, Nashville, A-L-L. You all have the very best of the best. And don't forget, who loves you?
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.